Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your number one source for the latest in WWE news and straightforward analysis.
Are you ready to get this thing going?
Give me a hell yeah! I said give me a hell yeah!
Then let's get this show started right now.
What's going on, everybody, guys and girls? Welcome back to another edition of the SmackDown Review right here on the WWE Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Michael Ritter. You can find me on Twitter at Michael5Ritter and on Instagram at MichaelRitter5, also the host of the Football Function Podcast, available on basically all of your platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. If you search the show, you will definitely be able to find it there. We're getting into some pretty fun stuff. But speaking of fun stuff, I really enjoyed this episode of SmackDown that aired on July the 9th, 2021. This was a damn good episode of SmackDown. Normally I don't, you know, have my expectations too high, even though SmackDown always delivers and it's a pretty good show consistently. But on a normal basis, I don't like to be disappointed, so I don't like to set my expectations very high, and I kind of went into this episode with that same approach. But it was a damn good episode. I will say it over-delivered, so to speak. And it was the perfect episode to be the last one without fans and before I myself go to Houston, which I'm extremely excited for. This episode only got me even more excited to go to Houston next Friday. And a week from tonight, I'll be in Houston. Probably about this time in exactly a week when I'm recording this right now, I'll probably be recording with Matt as a post SmackDown review, and I'll be able to tell you guys everything that happened there while I was there sitting on the ground. I'm looking forward to getting a chance to do that, man. This is super exciting for me. I'm not gonna lie, I mean, I kind of feel like a little kid again, you know, getting to go see some of these people who I've never seen. I've never gotten to see Edge, not in this capacity at least, because I did get to see him back in like 2006, I want to say. It was here in Amarillo or Canyon, Texas, one of the two for sure. I think it might have actually been in Canyon, Texas, which is a small town right outside of Amarillo, which is the city I live in. But I do think that it was whenever Edge just made his return, and he came over to Raw from SmackDown. So it might have been actually 2004. Yeah, I need to go back and look, because I'm really curious. But I do know that Edge was there, and he speared Kane, I believe it was. So that's the only time I've really gotten to see Edge. Not in a storyline like this. Not being as invested as I am now and being able to look at it from a different lens. So I'm excited to see Edge. I am 100% sure he's going to be there as it'll be the go-home show for Money in the Bank. But they also announced some of the matches that are going to be happening next week. We're going to get a Fatal 4-Way match with Seth Rollins, Shinsuke Nakamura, Big E, and Kevin Owens, the four representatives of SmackDown in the Money in the Bank ladder match, which is a week from Sunday. So, and we also get Bianca Belair and Carmella in a match for the SmackDown Women's Championship. Carmella will no longer be in the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match, and Bianca will no longer be defending her championship against Bayley at the pay-per-view. As you guys, I'm sure, know by now, Bayley suffered an injury, and she will be out for at least 9 months, according to Sonya Deville. It's what she said on the show tonight. So I guess you can just expect Bayley to be off the show for a while, which kind of sucks because I feel like she was really starting to come into her own as a heel. She's been doing it, you know, for the better part of the past like 4 or 5 months, but it's just, I mean, it sucks. You know, they get in a groove doing something. I mean, and her heel role wasn't embraced by the fans right away. I feel like she wasn't comfortable doing it yet at first, whenever she still had the same song, she still had the Bayley buddies, and she was just coming out as like a pissed off girl who just got a bad haircut or whatever, you know. So, I mean, it wasn't necessarily interesting. But now it's different. You believe it. This feels like she's being herself, although I'm not sure if she is really like this, but that's at least what it feels like. So it sucks for Bayley. I definitely am going to miss seeing her in the women's picture and the women's division as a whole. I mean, it's not necessarily in the position to just give up top talent like that, you know, just to push it to the side and put it on the shelf for 9 months. I mean, that's probably why you saw some of the people that we saw here on this episode And we got a little bit of a tease for a new women's wrestler coming up to the main roster. And it's going to be a SmackDown superstar, which also started to make me think, if they're introducing wrestlers from NXT coming up to specific brands, does that mean that this isn't going to be one of those start from scratch drafts that we had last year? Or are they kind of just going to pluck from each show and as the rosters are already constructed as we speak? That's kind of how I would prefer it. I don't want the rosters to just get reset and have to, you know, learn the roster and get used to all these new people. I want there to be a little bit of some, let's see what word I'm looking for here, I guess, continuity with the SmackDown roster from what we've had here. Because, I mean, remember, I'm not sure how many of you do actually remember that my first episode here as the official SmackDown review host was the SmackDown that the draft happened back in October. So that's kind of why I have a specific tie and a connection to this SmackDown roster, because it's the one roster that I've been covering, and it's why I can give WWE credit for being able to stay true to their brands. Although they have had their hiccups, they've had their quarterly invitational and their wild card rule, whatever. It hasn't necessarily been perfect, but I can definitely appreciate that for the most part, they've done better than what they did the last time they did this back in, what, 2017 or 2016? I can't remember the exact year, but they brought back the brand extension, and it was a failure. I'll just say that. Whenever it was SmackDown Live and Shane McMahon was a general manager and Stephanie McMahon was a general manager or something along those lines. Maybe they were actually commissioners now that I think about it, and Mick Foley and Daniel Bryan were their respective general managers on the show, but you guys get what I'm saying. They didn't really do it that well back then, and I feel like now it's kind of starting to catch a little bit of ground, and I hope it continues. I mean, I've been an advocate of the brand split for a very long time. I feel like if you use it right, it's a very, very good thing to have on your wrestling program. But with all that being said, I guess we can go ahead and get into this SmackDown and start talking about it. I mean, I'm pretty excited that this is actually the last SmackDown that I'm going to do before I am there in Houston. That's what I wrote down here at the very top of my notes, and I kept thinking about it as I was watching it, thinking, man, next week, I mean, these are the programs that I'm going to be seeing in person. And it's been so long. I mean, since I went to a WWE event almost 2 years ago, it was October 2019, the last time they came here to Amarillo, Texas. That was the last time I went. And I'm looking forward to kind of, you know, ending that drought in a mere 6 or 7 days. So it's pretty exciting to think about. But let's get into the SmackDown here. And it starts like most do. He was gone last week, but that's not the case this week. Roman Reigns is back, and he opens the show on SmackDown, and he actually addresses Edge's comments from last week and then turns his attention to Jimmy Uso, who comes out and starts to get a little bit of an ass-chewing from Roman Reigns before his own music hits, which I thought that was kind of weird. Jey Uso ends up coming out, but still, it's just weird. You know, usually while you're in the ring and somebody interrupts, it's not your own music. So I guess that was just kind of weird to see, but we all expected it. When the news broke what happened to Jimmy Uso, we all expected that Jey Uso would be brought back pretty soon. I mean, sooner than maybe we expected. I don't know what WWE's plans were. They could have always planned to bring him back this week to have a little bit of a build leading up to Money in the Bank with him involved in the program. So I feel like maybe that was always the plan all along, and it's just a coincidence that the circumstances happened with Jimmy. But anyways, Jey comes out. And then he kind of starts to clear things up a little bit. Because remember, he's been gone. So he kind of wanted to clear the air a little bit and maybe explain why he is back in the first place. And he says that he's not back for Roman. He's not back for Jimmy. He's basically, because he's not back for one person individually, he's back for the three of them collectively. And he tells Roman that his right-hand man is back. And then he tells Jimmy that he always has his back. And even in hard times like right now, Jimmy needs to keep his head up and keep moving forward so that they can become the 7-time WWE Tag Team Champions. And I feel like this was the only true acknowledgement of what happened to Jimmy last week with the DUI. I think that this, what Jey said, in hard times like this, you need to keep your head up and keep moving. I mean, that had nothing to do with the storyline. You know what he meant there. So I feel like that was a little bit of real stuff from brother to brother. So I feel like that was pretty cool. But after he says that and they talk about the 7-time tag team champions, I feel like this was the true moment where the quote-unquote bloodline, which hasn't been the official tagline yet or the official name of this group, but the group itself I feel like this is where it was officially formed. I mean, the three of them, they embrace each other with a group hug. And what I wrote down here is the faction looks to officially be off and running. So that's kind of what I'm going to go with. And we get more evidence of that later on in the show. To an extent, there are a little bit of more eyebrow-raising moments that might make you wonder what the hell is going on with these guys. But for the most part, at this point in the show, you get the idea that Jimmy and Jay are on the same page with Roman Reigns. That group hug told you everything you needed to know. And you could expect Gold to be in the Usos' future to kind of complete this faction to make them seem like, you know, even better than what they really are. If they all have championships around their waist, then that just adds to it. So let's see. Next, we get a backstage interview. It's a pretty quick one with Caleb Braxton and Baron Corbin. Basically, Corbin claims that he needs to win this match with Shinsuke Nakamura because his life is basically just crumbling around him, and it's hard to disagree. I mean, he has not shaved his head or his face, obviously, but so that's still going on there. And Pat McAfee and Big E, they kind of have a couple knee slappers there talking about it. It was actually pretty funny, but he basically just says, yeah, that he also got, or let's see, what exactly was it? Oh, yeah, he says that he even got a notice from somebody, I guess, calling that he might lose his house. So kind of similar to last week when he lost his car. I guess this week it's his house. So Baron Corbin must have really got in pretty deep with these investments, or maybe he just wasn't paying his payments for months and months now, and it's all just finally catching up to him. But the reason why they had this backstage interview is to basically just get you ready for what's next, and that is Corbin versus Nakamura, and this is a Money in the Bank qualifying match. Big E actually brings a couch and a mini fridge to ringside, and some foot massagers, I guess. I didn't really see that until him and Pat McAfee were sitting there in the chairs getting a foot massage, continuing their, you know, their commentary with Michael Cole. I mean, that's just, it's kind of funny. I mean, I dig this type of stuff if it makes sense. And Big E and Pat McAfee are definitely the kind of guys to do something like that. And really quickly, I guess I just want to talk about Pat McAfee. And I will say, every week, I mean, and you guys know, I'm a huge Pat fan. Before Pat came to WWE, after he leaves WWE, I'm going to still be a Pat fan. So this is all, I'm really enjoying this, seeing him on SmackDown. And it really is kind of badass, in my opinion. So, but it's biased aside, and just speaking about this from an objective point of view, he legitimately does add something to the commentary team. I mean, he's not your Byron Saxton. He's not shooting out, you know, corporate phrases and taglines and just being extremely corny. I mean, Pat McAfee, he's being himself out there. And he does add a little bit of comedy. He just adds a different perspective. And I will say, on a weekly basis, I like seeing the fans start to appreciate Pat and maybe just like him a little bit more on a weekly basis. So as somebody who's been a Pat McAfee fan for years, it is kind of cool to see the wrestling fans and the internet wrestling community finally start to come around and maybe warm up to him, I guess, to say the least. But let's see here. Before this match actually starts, the Jumbotron shows a clip from earlier in the day where apparently Shinsuke Nakamura and Rick Boogs bought Baron Corbin's Mercedes that he lost last week. I guess they got it in an auction and they were bragging about how cheap they got it for. So, I mean, the shots and the kicking while he's down continues for Baron Corbin. And here with Nakamura, this is only about a 10-minute match. It ends with Nakamura hitting the Kinshasa, I guess. I mean, that's a little tongue twister there. Kinshasa. And my S's are a little weird. If you guys have noticed, I kind of struggle with S's. Not really struggle, but I didn't really notice until I heard this podcast. It almost sounds like I have a lisp, but I don't have a lisp. Like, if you hear my S's, most of the time it's pretty clear that I don't, but sometimes I'll catch it, because I mean, on my other podcast now, I'm hearing myself even more and more than just once a week, so it's just one thing I kind of noticed. I've gotten used to it by now, but it's just funny. You don't notice things like that about yourself until you actually start listening. But like I said, this was a pretty good match. Shinsuke wins with a Kinshasa, and then the match is over. Shinsuke qualifies for the Money in the Bank briefcase. Or he qualifies for the Money in the Bank ladder match to win the briefcase. I'm all sorts of mixed up right now. But anyways, one thing I noticed during this match is they constantly called him King Shinsuke, King Nakamura. So it looks like that whole King gimmick is going to transfer with who has that crown. It's almost like a championship in of itself. It's kind of weird. I didn't really like that. I was like, oh, man, are they really going to do this? I thought that it was basically just a way to get the crown off of Corbin and they were going to just get rid of it. But for whatever reason, they're continuing with this, and they are not going to stop. Maybe until Baron Corbin just completely loses it, and maybe then they'll finally, you know, just have, you know what they say? If you stop giving a bully attention, eventually he'll stop bullying you. Well, maybe this will happen to Baron Corbin. Eventually, maybe they'll stop. They'll get over making him just be humiliated on a weekly basis, and they'll leave him alone and just ditch the crown, you know, as a whole. So that's kind of what I am hoping for, because, I mean, King Nakamura, I mean, I'm just not on board with that. I think Shinsuke can do a lot better than that gimmick, and just the King gimmick as a whole. We need a break from it. You can't just pass it around like it's a championship or something like that. You know, you need to get a break from that. Years, like a year break, more than 1 year. Like, I don't even remember who the last King of the Ring was. It wasn't like King Barrett or something like that, but either way, we don't need to see this for quite some time, so I'd be perfectly fine with this, with them putting this on the shelf for a very long time. But moving on here, we get to a point in the show that's actually kind of exciting. Natalya and Tamina versus mystery opponents, and that kind of made me think, when was the last time the WWE actually used mystery opponents to, like, advertise leading into a commercial break? I mean, it probably hasn't been that long, but me personally, I can't really remember the last time that I actually saw a tag team going up against another tag team, and it's legitimately, like, question marks. Like, I don't know. Maybe I am just exaggerating there, or I am just mistaken and my memory is off, but if somebody can remember when the last time that was, go ahead and let me know, because I definitely feel like that was the first time since I've been covering SmackDown, because I feel like I definitely would have remembered that. But I do enjoy, or I did enjoy, who these mystery opponents end up being. Shotzi Blackheart and Tegan Nox from NXT. I was pretty excited here and surprised. I didn't expect them to be the tag team. I thought it was going to be a couple enhancement talent. You know, they said this is going to be, they're going to be going up against a team that it's their first time competing on SmackDown or something like that. So me personally, I thought it was going to be a squash match and them going up against some, you know, local team that has no shot at actually winning. But whenever I heard Shotzi Blackheart's music, I legitimately popped. Like, I got excited. I'm very familiar with her. I love what she's doing on NXT. I kind of thought that maybe Ember Moon was going to be her partner. So I was surprised that they came up, just an NXT team. And then I was even more surprised that it was Tegan Nox, because I feel like I haven't seen her in a long time. But I don't watch NXT religiously, obviously. So, I mean, I don't really know. She could be poking her head in and out, and I just have completely missed it. But from what I can remember, I have not seen Tegan Nox in a long time. So it was nice to see her return. They were introduced as Shotzi and Nox. So yes, you can probably expect that they're not going to have last names, and one of them is not going to have a first name or something like that. They're not going to just let them be who they were and what got them over with fans. They're going to try to tweak them a little bit, and that kind of sucked to see their very first match, literally. Like, I was, oh my gosh, that kind of put a little bit of a bad taste, but the match was still good. It was still nice to see them, and you could tell that they were bringing their A game. So I wasn't going to, you know, rant about anything like that, but it was kind of like, man, just leave the NXT people alone. If you're going to bring them up and let them be who they are. Like, you don't have to mess with them. You don't have to tweak them. You don't have to do anything like that, because it just defeats the purpose of bringing up somebody who some of the fans are familiar with and already like. You know, they already like that character. It's already established. Leave it like it is. It's not like they were in a different company. NXT is still WWE. You don't have to give them a new name. Just let them be who they are. So that's all I got to say about that really quick. But yeah, Shotzi ends up pinning Natalya after hitting her with, I think it was a ball pit. Is that what it was called? It's kind of like a coffin drop. He just drops off the top rope. It looked like she missed, and I thought she did. I thought that she completely missed Natalya. The camera angle really didn't give you a good one, and they didn't show the replay, so that probably tells you that she did miss. If any of you noticed that, go ahead and let me know. But yeah, I thought that Shotzi missed, but nonetheless, they give her the win. And the new team, hopefully permanently on SmackDown, is starting their 10-year 1-0. So if they do come up as a tag team, I mean, I feel like that's probably what they should do. I know that probably you want to see both of them eventually do their own thing, but I feel like right now there are no women's tag teams. So having them immediately go and do their own thing, one of them as Shotzi and one of them as Nox, I don't really think that's the best thing you can do. Leave them together. Kind of like what they did with Aleister Black and who was it? Was it Ricochet? I can't remember who the guy was that they would constantly have Aleister Black partner with when he first came up to the main roster. And he was, excuse me, it seemed like he was almost equal with Aleister Black. So I don't really know if that was a if that was kind of the, or if that's the same method that they're going to use, kind of have the NXT call-ups team up together just to kind of establish themselves. But I can't remember if that was Ricochet or not. I'm going to have to go back and look. But either way, I was happy with this. I was glad to see them get the win. So hopefully we will see more of Shotzi Blackheart and Tegan Nox here on SmackDown. Keeping things in the women's division, we get Sonya Deville coming to the ring to address Bayley's injury. And kind of what I alluded to earlier in the episode, she says that Bianca will no longer be defending her championship at Money in the Bank, and she will defend it next week in Houston against Carmella. So that was the first actual match announced for next week in Houston. I got a little bit excited. It made it seem real. You know you're going to go, you know, weeks leading up to it. You don't know what you're going to see, but you know you're going to go and have a good idea of the roster that you're going to be looking at. But whenever a match finally gets officially announced, it kind of starts to sink in. And, you know, man, the card is actually starting to come together, and it does come together a little bit more towards the end of the show. But like I said, she basically gives Carmella another opportunity. At first, she gave her a spot in the Money in the Bank ladder match. Now she's just saying, screw that. She's just going to give her a women's championship match for free, pretty much, and even a couple days sooner at that. So Liv does not think this is a very good idea. She comes out, and she starts to get in Sonya Deville's face, and she begins to call her out and, you know, claim how she's beaten Carmella multiple times. How many more times does she have to beat her to qualify for the match? How this is basically BS what she's doing. And Sonya kind of loses it and says, shut up. You know, basically you interrupted me before I can finish, and I was about to say that you were going to replace Carmella in the Money in the Bank ladder match. Carmella's going to get this championship opportunity next week on SmackDown, so that's going to vacate her spot in the Money in the Bank ladder match, which I thought was good. Whenever, you know, as this was happening in real time and Carmella first got that, it was announced that Carmella got the women's championship next week on SmackDown, I thought that she was going to get both. I was like, okay, so wait, if she loses this match, does she just automatically get another opportunity on Sunday in the Money in the Bank ladder match to, you know, get that contract? So I thought that was kind of weird. But they clear that up, and they give her a spot to Liv Morgan. So Liv is officially in the Money in the Bank ladder match, which I'm not necessarily as certain who I'm confident in winning that one. I'm definitely more confident in the men's than I am here in the women's. So we'll get to what's going on there in the men's, because next we have the very last qualifying match for that final spot in the men's Money in the Bank ladder match. But before this match happens, we actually get a commercial break announcing that Toni Storm, another NXT women's wrestler, is going to be coming soon to SmackDown. So that's what I was talking about a little bit earlier. They're starting to announce people from NXT coming up to specific rosters. So does that mean during the draft that they're off limits? Why would you announce them to a specific roster if there's a possibility that they can end up on a completely different one? See, so I'm hoping that they do go with that and they leave Toni Storm. I mean, selfishly, I hope they leave Toni Storm on SmackDown. She's definitely one of my favorites, especially on NXT. So I was excited to see that. I was excited to see Shotzi and Tegan. Man, SmackDown got a nice little dose of NXT talent on this episode. I mean, Toni didn't make an appearance, but seeing that commercial got me just as excited as if she would have shown up. So hopefully we will get to see a lot of Toni Storm and the other NXT women here on SmackDown going forward. But speaking of that men's Money in the Bank match, or that qualifying match between Seth Rollins and Cesaro, this one had Kevin Owens on commentary, and he actually provided some good insight, I will say, as to what the Money in the Bank contract means, and specifically mentioned multiple scenarios that interest him if he were to actually win that briefcase. He talks about Roman Reigns and how he has history with Bobby Lashley, who previously injured him, and he even mentions Edge, who has his head in the title picture as well. Kofi Kingston, even though we know that he's going to lose, Kevin Owens even mentioned him. So he put a little bit of depth into this whole picture and kind of painted a better picture as to what you can expect. You know, I mean, there's multiple scenarios and multiple avenues you can go down with whenever you win. It's almost like winning the Royal Rumble. It really is, because, I mean, you get that opportunity and it basically gives you an opportunity to change brands. So, I mean, you tell me how it's any different than the Royal Rumble. I mean, it's more beneficial than the Royal Rumble, literally. It's easy. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you can debate if it's easier to win a Royal Rumble or the Money in the Bank ladder match, because the Money in the Bank ladder match is pretty damn hard. But a Royal Rumble is not easy either. So, I mean, I like both of these matches. That's why I feel like Money in the Bank should be higher on the totem pole on the yearly pay-per-view schedule. As far as the match goes, you know what you can expect from these two. They put on another good one, 18 minutes, and Cesaro gets busted open. I wasn't sure if it was real blood or not, but they definitely showed some color in this match, and he eventually loses. Seth Rollins gets the win with a stomp, and he gets the very last spot for the Men's Money in the Bank Money in the Bank ladder match a week from Sunday. So, I mean, and I wrote down here in my notes, Seth Rollins earns the final spot, and he is my early pick to win the entire thing. I do. I really think Seth Rollins is going to win it. They kind of alluded to it earlier in the show. They mentioned that he is one for one. He's only been in one Money in the Bank ladder match, and he won that Money in the Bank ladder match and then went on to successfully cash in the contract, as most people will agree. Probably the most interesting and the best cash in of all time. So, I mean, really quickly, Seth Rollins is, he's on another level. Just when you're talking about in-ring character, just everything about him as a total package, I would not be surprised if whenever it's all said and done, Seth Rollins is up there whenever you're talking about the greatest of all time. And I know that might be a little bit of a hot take, but I don't really know. I mean, you just watch the guy and you tell me he's absolutely talented in that ring. There's really not that many guys in the business who are better than him. I mean, really, I can't think of many who are, who I can confidently say can go toe-for-toe, or who can go toe-to-toe with Seth Rollins. So just really high on my list. I definitely appreciate what Seth Rollins does, and I'm definitely glad that he's on SmackDown. I hope that he stays on SmackDown. I'm kind of, the closer we get to this draft, I'm going to start to, you know, mention it more and more about guys who I hope stay and who I hope go over to the other brand, and maybe some guys who I hope come over from Raw over to SmackDown. But nonetheless, I'm glad that Seth Rollins got this spot, and let's see if he ends up winning, because I really think he will end up winning this. But before we move on from Seth completely, he does have another segment here in the show. He gets a backstage interview with Caleb Braxton. And, well, let's see. But before this happens, because somebody pops up here in this interview, but before this happens, Jimmy and Jay are shown standing outside of Edge's locker room. And Jimmy was about to just knock on his door, you know, because they want to confront Edge and ultimately, you know, kick his ass before Roman Reigns even has to, because Edge is supposed to call him out. So Jimmy's about to knock on his door, but Jay stops him and insists that they wait for him to come out and then basically just sneak up and attack him from behind, do it that way. And I think that they agree that that's the smarter thing. So we go to commercial break, and then whenever we come back, Jimmy's tired of waiting. He says, man, I'm tired of waiting out here, yada, yada, yada. He breaks in, and Edge isn't there. So they're like, oh, what the hell, you know, Edge is gone. After we just waited out here for, what, like 5 minutes for him? So I don't know. But next we get a backstage interview, and it is with Caleb Braxton and Seth Rollins. And he rhetorically asks who the last person was that he cashed in reference to WrestleMania 31, which I thought was, I mean, if you want to nitpick and get technical, I mean, technically you were cashing in on Brock Lesnar, but I understand Roman Reigns was involved in the match and he got screwed there because he was about to win. He finally started to pick up momentum. Just as a little side note, that's one of my favorite matches, like, of all time. And I know it wasn't, like, it's not up there with, like, Rock Austin or, like, the main event of WrestleMania 20 or anything like that, but just in terms of getting me into wrestling again, that match definitely had a lot to do with it. I feel like the way Brock and Roman went at it, that was just one of my pure favorite WrestleMania matches of all time. But anyway, getting back on topic here, he mentions that and how he cashed in on Roman Reigns once, and he kind of mocks him a little bit and, you know, says maybe he'll do it again. Maybe he'll do it that night at Money in the Bank if he wins. Just starts to already tease, kind of like, you know, whoever wins the briefcase is going to do inevitably. But Caleb Braxton starts to kind of back up, and she looks scared, and that's because Edge is actually standing there right behind Seth Rollins, as you would expect. And then Edge instantly mentions 2014 and says that he hasn't forgotten, which I love, because you know we're going to get this soon, Edge versus Seth Rollins. So I love that they're already talking about it. And Edge, you already know the type of Edge you're going to get during this program. So, I mean, this right here got me excited and had a lot to do with why I was so high on this episode of SmackDown as a whole. But after he mentions 2014, he gets back to 2021 and says that he's about to go to the ring right now and do what Seth is scared to do, and that's call out Roman Reigns, and then he walks away. So that's pretty much all we get. I definitely think that Edge got the better of Seth Rollins here on the mic. Seth looked a little bit flustered whenever Edge walked up and kind of, you know, started, you know, basically just talking about 2014 and stuff like that. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Edge does. And this alone, this encounter right here, is basically a reason for Seth to get involved. So keep an eye on this. If Edge does get involved next Sunday at Money in the Bank, you can definitely look to this as his reasoning why he's, you know, talking about why he did it. He's going to mention this, I guarantee it. So it's just something to keep in mind. But moving on, we get a little bit of a segment, a little quick one from Gable and Otis backstage. And the only thing you really take, I mean, it really wasn't anything different. The only thing I took from this was Otis actually does sound different. I said that I wanted to hear him speak. He really hasn't, you know, said anything that much. He hasn't said like a full sentence. But he did say, I will destroy anyone. And it, I mean, it sounded different. You could tell. I mean, Otis's voice was very specific back whenever he was in Heavy Machinery and whenever he had his long hair and his beard. I mean, you could tell how Otis sounded and how it was very different than anyone else. And I mean, it definitely sounded different now whenever he was being more himself and he's this heel character. I mean, it's just more reason to get behind this and to be invested in what Otis is going to bring to the table and what we can expect from him going forward. I'm definitely, you know, I'm looking forward to this. I mean, I really am. I hope that I see Otis next week. I really am. I want to see him in person. So, I mean, it's more and more things to get excited about as we get closer to next week in Houston. But now we're getting here to the main event of the show. It's not really a main event because it's not a match, but it's the final segment. And it's the one we've all been waiting for throughout the show, that is. And that's Edge's supposed call out for Roman Reigns. He's supposed to go out to the ring and call out Roman. And he does just that. And then the show, or the camera shows Roman backstage, who basically, he's sitting down at first. And then whenever Edge tells Roman to come to the ring, he stands up and he tells the Usos to stay there. He says that he'll handle this by himself. But I guess they feel like it's a trap. They don't feel confident that Roman can handle this by himself. One of those reasons, because they head to the ring anyway, despite Roman telling them to stay. And whenever their music hits, as Roman was heading to the ring, he's visibly upset. You can tell that he didn't want them to come out there, and he was hoping that they would, you know, stay backstage, or at least that's the vibe I got. That seemed like it might, because while it was happening very slow, whenever the Usos came to help Roman, at first he didn't look too happy, but I thought, wait a minute, is he going to, like, change his facial expression and tell them to go to the ring and attack Edge? I honestly thought that might happen. It did not, but I thought that there was a chance that that could happen. But anyways, nonetheless, Roman does eventually get inside the ring, and him and Edge go at it for a little bit. They have that one-on-one encounter, and Edge is starting to get the better of Roman. And then all out of nowhere, you hear the Mysterios music. Like, this right here is kind of where it got a little bit confusing for me, because the Mysterios come out and they kind of make Jimmy and Jay turn their back, and then the Mysterios creep up from behind him, hit him with steel chairs. And they kind of have their little bit of a back-and-forth brawl outside of the ring while Roman and Edge are still inside of the ring. Roman eventually makes a run for it, and Jimmy and Jay end up getting punished as Roman leaves. And they both get put in that crossbar with the metal bar, or that crossface with the metal bar right across their face, inside their mouth. And he actually went back and forth. He put it in Jay's mouth and put it in Jimmy. I thought that was weird, just going back and forth. In this economy, with COVID going around, you kidding me? I'm just kidding, but definitely a weird thing to see. I mean, I would not want, even if it's my brother, I would not want a bar that was kicked off by somebody's shoe, landed on the ground, inside the ring, who's God knows what's been on there, and then inside my mouth, inside my brother's mouth, back inside. That's just gross as hell. I don't know. That was one thing that I noticed. I was like, come on, man. But anyways, I mean, Edge wasn't trying to make them comfortable. I mean, that just adds to it. Like, that's another layer on top. You know, you get that cross face with the bar. And to top it off, yeah, it was just inside somebody else's mouth, so deal with that. But yeah, that was kind of gross. But that's how SmackDown goes off the air. And this is the last SmackDown without fans inside the Thunderdome. I noticed that they haven't really been doing the intro, the full intro here lately. They kind of just start SmackDown with like a piece of the song. You know what I'm talking about. But today they did it. They did the full Thunderdome intro that they did whenever they first introduced it. And it was just basically a way, you know, to do it one last time, kind of say goodbye to the Thunderdome. And, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, yeah, it was nice. It was a cool little way to get the fans to be involved. And it was better than the Performance Center with nothing, just that one fan at the top, you know, the spinning fan. I know people kind of made jokes about that. But, I mean, I agree that the Thunderdome was definitely an upgrade from that. But me personally, let's get these fans back. Let's get back to normal. I'm ready to get wrestling back to the way that we're all used to it. And the way that wrestling was when we all fell in love, you know, like when we all fell in love with it. So it's one thing to to go without it for a couple weeks, which is what we thought was going to happen, maybe a couple months. But the fact that it's been like a year and a half with no fans. And yeah, I know we had WrestleMania. That was badass for everybody that went there. I understand that that was probably a pretty cool experience. But man, we're about to get back on the road. And it's exciting, man. The fact that, I mean, I did not expect that I was going to be there, just being honest. Whenever this happened, I remember talking about it. Man, that first show back with fans on the road, that is going to be crazy. Way before I ever thought, or before I ever even imagined that it was going to be in Texas. You know, I thought that maybe it'd be in Florida or somewhere there on the East Coast. I didn't expect them to start in Texas. I mean, it makes sense now given how, you know, loose Texas is with their laws and their restrictions and stuff like that. I guess as far as, like, fan attendance and stuff like that, like back when they were probably planning this and all this 25 city tour, they probably knew right then, all right, Texas is already letting people inside the stadium at the Rangers games and stuff like that, so that's probably the place where we could start. It makes sense. But I mean, I don't know, I feel like things all kind of fell together. The fact that I get to go and enjoy this too, it's going to be a fun time, and I'm looking forward to this week, just finding things out, hearing more matches possibly get announced, and obviously, you know, flying to Houston, getting there, and it all becoming real. Man, I'm really excited, obviously. I've said that probably 5 or 6 times now, but I'll probably call into the mailbag this week and leave a voicemail so I can maybe get my thoughts quickly on Raw or something like that before the next time you guys hear me, and that will be the live conversation with me and Matt. And I'll also probably be chiming in on that Discord conversation as well while I'll be there in Houston. So that'll be fun too. You guys, quickly, if you're not already involved in that, get involved and get subscribed to Patreon. Get the episodes ad free. That's one benefit. Obviously, there's other tiers that you can do, but number one, just do that $1 a month. Get subscribed so you can get these ad free episodes, and then be part of the Discord server, because I was a part of that conversation as well for the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, and I can already imagine what the SmackDown one's going to be like, and then the Money in the Bank. So it's a good time, a nice little VIP room, as Matt likes to say. So definitely get involved with that if you haven't already. But as far as I go, guys, I definitely want to thank you for listening to this podcast. If you are a first-time listener, thank you for choosing this podcast. If you're a regular listener, thank you for making it part of your weekly routine. I definitely appreciate it. It means the world to me. This is my 41st SmackDown review. I've been doing this for 42 weeks. I did take that week off whenever I got COVID in January. So 42 weeks of doing this. And, man, it's I feel like it's getting more and more fun. Next week's going to be a completely different experience, something I've never really done before. And I'm excited, like I've already said probably 10 times now. So I'll shut up and quit repeating myself and basically just, I guess, end things here. So hope all you guys have a great weekend. Walk passionately in the direction of your dreams, and I'll talk to you soon.